to talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet. I climbed down up inside.
Well, welcome. Good morning, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And my name's Mark Salem, and for the next few minutes, or the next 2 hours.
2 hours.
2 hours. My wife and I will be at your service with car repair questions and problems. Her job is to keep me from being ornery and to correct me on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And then tell everybody when I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's a tough job.
That's it. That's it. Well, we've been in the car repair business 39 years together.
Yes.
And so she's been there every minute I've been there, with few exceptions.
Yes, that's true.
With the kid stuff. But 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, if you've got a question. But I want to tell you about automatic transmission exchange real quick. On my website, which is marksalem.com, I have a list of the very best shops in Phoenix. These are shops that I say to you, if you have a problem, file a nice complaint with the Better Business Bureau. The keywords in there is nice. And the Better Business Bureau will determine what should happen. And if the shop is told to make a refund, or if the shop is told to fix the car and they refuse, two things happen. Number one, it gets kicked off the list. And number two, either I will fix your car or I will make the rebate with a cap of $5,000. So, you know by what I just told you that I truly believe these guys will take care of you. And since 1988, we've never paid a dime.
Nope. We haven't.
Each and every time the shop has abided by what the Better Business Bureau said, even though the Better Business Bureau may have said they didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
But nevertheless, it's worked out well.
That's been few and far between.
Right.
We really haven't had that many complaints at all.
We were close one time.
Right.
But the shop, I gave the shop a deadline, and they came through, and the customer was very happy. At least that's what he said. So anyway, automatic transmission exchange is on our list. He's been around since 1968, and the common denominator in most of our lists of shops is gray hair.
Mm-hmm.
We've been around the block a couple of times. Phil has too. Transmission repairs, replacements, transmission oil leaks, transmission shift performance problems, all that kind of stuff is well within automatic transmission exchange. 40th Street in Washington, north side of the road. If you live in Central Phoenix, you've driven up and down Washington, and they're the same place, the same time, since 1968. Okay, I found something, two things, on the internet that I wanted to kind of open up with. There was an article in this week, in today's paper. It's a technical article about cars.
Okay.
And they talked about, a lady had written in and said, you know, I don't drive my car very much, and I'm really scared that it's not going to last a long time, as opposed to other people. So she's probably in the 3,000-4,000 miles a year range. It's like Alon. We talked to him the other day.
Right.
And he was
7,000 or something.
Yeah, a year.
Which is pretty low.
But then you got people with 20 and 30,000 miles a year. Folks, what they talked about was, and what he said was, it may have been a mistake. He said that oil, we create water, and the water in your engine mixes with the oil equals sludge. And sludge is really bad because it will contaminate all the moving parts inside your motor, which there's lots. In addition to that, it will turn your oil thick like a chocolate jello, a chocolate kind of frosting. And then that will create a substandard oil flow to the moving parts, and ultimately there's going to be a problem you're going to have to pay for. So that's what sludge does. But they wrote down that oil holds the water in suspension and that she doesn't need to worry about that. But what the truth is that oil holds dirt in suspension, so the next time that drop of oil that has all that dirt in it goes through the filter can remove the dirt.
Okay.
But everybody knows water and oil doesn't mix.
Exactly.
Everybody knows that. So I don't understand the relationship, and I'm also going to disagree with the whole focus of the article. If you're driving your car short distances, you're creating water, because every time you shut it off, it creates about a tablespoon of water. If your engine doesn't get up to operating temperature, which is 212 degrees, 220 degrees, somewhere in that area, then we're not going to turn the water inside your engine to a vapor, and the vapor is vacuumed out of your engine by the positive crankcase ventilation valve, or PCV valve. So There's those things have to happen. Now, the people that drive 30,000 miles a year don't have to worry about that. But the people who drive 2, 3, 4, 5,000 miles a year, that car needs to be exercised every once in a while, and it needs to have sustained speeds that that go on for an hour. So take your car to Flagstaff or Payson, or take your car, and if it's a bunch of ladies are going to go to lunch together, take your car. But you have to exercise, kind of like a horse. If you just take him out and walk him around the barn, he's never going to run a race.
Right. I think we had people say that somebody drove their car while they were on vacation or something like that, and they take it around the block just to exercise it. And that's probably the worse than letting it just sit there.
Yeah. We in the old days,
right.
We had 180-degree thermostats, and we've rarely had an engine that lasted between 100 and 200,000 miles, rarely. Most of them were sludged up. It was like chocolate frosting inside there, just black frosting. And we never understood, but everybody thought that the Pennsylvania oil caused it. That different oils caused the sludge. So in about the mid-80s, we figured out, the industry figured out that the sludge is water and oil. And this sludge is being created because we couldn't get the water out. So we went from a 180 to a 195 thermostat, and we took the operating temperature up to 220. Now we're going to boil the water out. Now, Renee, when does water boil?
At 220. You just said it.
No.
I don't know.
212.
212. Oh, yeah.
I asked a bunch of college students that not too long ago. And they, you could hear crickets chirping.
Right.
And then one guy goes, 100 degrees Celsius. And I said, I think that's the conversion for 212 Fahrenheit.
I have no idea.
So if our engines run in the mid-80s, we figure out if our engines run up there 220, then the water doesn't stay in the oil. We boil it out because it's experiencing temperatures well over 212, where it goes from a liquid to a vapor. Once it turns to a vapor, the vacuum cleaner sucks it out, sends it out the tailpipe. We're done.
Okay.
So the oil is not held in suspension, or water's not held in suspension by the oil. Everybody knows they don't mix. So if you're one of those people that drives, one of those folks that doesn't drive much, perhaps maybe if your neighbor is going to go to Quartzsite for the weekend or just for a trip back and forth or something like that, maybe if you trust your neighbor, maybe you have them go exercise your car.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other way around the sludge. You can change your oil every 3,000 miles, but you still haven't got the water out of the oil. So, yes, we're going to drain the oil and the water, but we still have the sludge byproduct that happens. Number two.
Okay.
I'm going to read something to you, and I want you to talk about it. 602-508-0960 is the phone number, 602-508-0960. Gil will answer the phone. We'll get you on as quickly as we can. This is on a website.
Okay.
My check engine light is on. Should I be worried? The simple answer is yes. Bring it in! Exclamation point. This warning light is connected to many components in your car, and the longer you wait, the more it will cost you. The last sentence is worth it again, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This warning light is connected to many components in your car. I agree with that.
Okay.
And the longer you wait, the more it will cost you.
You don't know that till you see what light it is.
I know, but if there's a problem that causes the engine to overheat, be a symptom.
Right.
If you can smell rotten eggs, it's running rich, symptom.
Right.
If it's running lean, it has a tough time getting out of its way, symptom.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing of if you wait, it will cost you more, that's just not true.
Right.
That's a scare tactic. Mm-hmm. That's something that we're going to use to scare you into bringing your car in right now.
Yeah.
The check engine color of the color of the check engine light is?
Well, red.
Oh, you
could
just,
be orange.
Orange. It's the check engine's always orange. But the other warning lights are red.
Red. Okay.
That's the oil and the overheat and all that kind of stuff. Boy, you need to stop drinking in the morning. I'm just telling you that.
See, I'm rusty because I haven't been on for a while.
That's true. You've been shopping.
No. Well, I thought one was red. I mean, caution is red. Or caution is yellow or orange. And then red is
stop now.
Right.
That's the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And overheat red, stop now. They're not kidding you.
Right.
An oil light red, stop now. They're not kidding you.
Mm-hmm.
But a yellow light is caution. ABS is yellow.
Right.
Tire pressure monitoring system is yellow. Service soon light is yellow. It's just caution. It's just pay attention. So it's just not going to cost you more. If you have to wait a week to get your car in and you don't smell anything and it's not overheating and it's not clattering and there's no other dash lights, it's no big deal. If you're in Albuquerque and you're on your way home and your check engine light comes on, you can come home.
As long as there's no other symptoms.
That's no other symptoms. Yeah. But typically, not typically, there's going to be a problem, but it could be something silly and stupid. Now, 50% of the check engine lights are repaired with plugging in a vacuum line, replacing the fuel filter, fixing something that's simple.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all replace all the injectors,
right,
all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
those are the kinds of things that you're up against. So those
yeah,
two things I just wanted to touch base with.
Because normally when people call in and they say, I have an engine light on, and you say, is it running bad? Are you noticing anything? And 9 times out of 10, they say no.
Right.
I know no difference. So,
and it's the check engine light says a computer sees a problem and it sets a code. The code doesn't tell you what's wrong with it. The code tells you that the problem is in Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to go find the street and then the number of the house and then find the house.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't imagine, folks, how many times we fixed an O2 sensor code. Now, the oxygen sensor tells the computer what's coming out the tailpipe. Too much fuel, if the oxygen sensor's screaming, too much gas, then the computer takes the knob and shuts off the fuel, the
mm-hmm,
faucet. This computer shuts off the faucet. If the oxygen sensor goes, man, I don't see any fuel in this exhaust at all, then the computer opens the fuel faucet.
Okay.
So that happens hundreds, if not thousands, times a second.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at all of that, the O2 sensor's screaming. Now, if the O2 sensor's screaming lean, it can be the fuel filter's plugged up, and you're killing the messenger.
Mm-hmm.
So by replacing the O2 sensor, two things happen. Number one, you have to pay the bill, and number two, we didn't make a step forward.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be, oh, well, that didn't fix it. Let's go further.
Right.
If it's running too rich, then the computer's looking at that and shutting the faucet off, and we can have an O2 sensor that's bad, admittedly, but we can have a bad fuel pressure regulator, we can have a bad injector, we can have lots of fuel delivery where the fuel delivery is higher than it should. The O2 sensor is the messenger, and about, 25% or less of the time we're having to deal with the O2 sensor. Last but not least, testing the O2 sensor, not in your garage at home, but in our garage, in most of the shops in town, we're going to see if the O2 sensor can see both ends of the parameter. Otherwise, let's pretend it's a speedometer. It goes from 0 to 100. So we create a situation where we demand to see a 1, and it gives us a 1. We create a situation where we want to see 100, and it gives us 100. Boom, the O2 sensor's fine. But if we ask for number one and it can't get there, if we ask for 100 and it can't get there, otherwise we're saying, here's a lean condition, you better say lean. Here's a rich condition, you better say rich. If it sees both of those, the O2 sensor's fine. But if it's in the middle and it doesn't move, then the O2 sensor's bad. That's as easy as it is. But the code doesn't do anything other than tell us it's in Cleveland, Ohio. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be back in a minute. After the hour, 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about car and car repair stuff, and you're always welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We can talk about just about any facet of your car. Yesterday I had a call from a friend of mine who has my cell phone, and he says, my car's coming up on lease, and should I buy it or should I sell it? That's a good question. When is it that I should get rid of it, and when is it should I trade it in? And where's the best place to go for car repair? And that depends on what kind of car repair we need. And those are the kinds of questions. And then I have this kind of symptom. And part of this radio show is give and take. It's you. I ask you questions, and you, for me, what you do is you just tell me the answer. So I'll say to you, you have a check engine light on. How does it start? How does it run? What kind of fuel economy? Do you have a rotten egg smell? Have you made any changes? Has any work been done to your car? Those are the things that are going to kind of set me in the right direction. What doesn't help me is the list of things that you've installed on the car. That doesn't help. So sometimes we'll have a situation where someone will say, I have this kind of car, and this is what I've done to it. And it goes on and on and on. And in reality, none of that helps us. So it's symptom, and it's an exchange of questions and answers. 602-508-0960. And I'm going to get to the car in just a second, but let me talk about Larry Harker's Auto. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob is one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. He has gray hair, and he's earned that gray hair. So Larry Harker's has been open and serving people in Phoenix since 1967. They do everything from oil changes, electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, check engine lights, all that stuff. So if you have a problem, and you've got to, this is how you start the conversation. I've had this car all over town and nobody can fix it. Then it belongs at 38th Avenue and Indian School at Larry Harker's Auto. Yes, sir. Who am I speaking to?
Speaking to Will.
To Will. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great, Mark. Love your show. Thank you so much for all you do. Okay, I've got a 2000 F-150, 192,000 miles on it. Great truck. I have a great mechanic up in Prescott. That's kind of the area I live. My question to you, Mark, is you're talking about check engine lights. My check engine's been on for 5 years, I guess. You know, these guys, you know, I take it in and out of the shop for this, that, and the other, and they try this and try that. I have no complaints, no symptoms. I'm happy with the truck. But do you get vehicles that you just can't get that stinking thing to shut off?
No. I can tell you that many of us, and I'm raising my hand right now, it's up high, many of us just get in a funk and we need a fresh pair of eyes. And I am not shy about sending somebody who has that car situation to another shop. I'm going to send them to one, a really good diagnostician. But let me ask you this, what's the code?
Oh, you know what? I can't tell you right off. I'm really okay. Sorry. It's something about lean, though. It's something about lean fuel or something that seems okay. To be the common cold. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I'm going to guess, but it's going to be an educated guess. Your F-150 has a PCV valve hose that's very difficult to see, very difficult to touch. It's buried. And the PCV valve has constant vacuum to it, and the PCV valve is supposed to vacuum the fumes out of the engine and run them through the cylinders again. So we're going to take the fumes that contain hydrocarbons, gas, and we're going to run them through the system again and send them out the tailpipe. That PCV valve hose, it will look completely normal, but somewhere on that hose there'll be a kind of a slice, and there'll be an indentation on the round hose, and that's a vacuum leak. Now, that's going to cause a lean condition, period, period, period. And we find that on the F-150s all the time. I think the hose is less than $20. If you buy it and it's from Ford or it's from one of the aftermarket warranties and it's a pre-fit hose, some guys say, I'm not doing that. They just put a piece of vacuum line on it. But I think that would be the first place I would start, and I wouldn't just look at it. I would do this. I would take a long piece of heater hose, 3/4 inch heater hose, and I put it to my ear, and I'd have the motor running, and I would go to where that PCV valve hose is, and I would start waving that hose within an inch, the hose that's connected to my ear, within an inch of the PCV valve, of the line, that goes from a vacuum port to the PCV valve. Now, if I'm right, it's gonna sound like this. There'll be nothing, and then I'll hear this. And I just pass the vacuum leak. I'm going to hear a sucking sound as opposed to what I just did a minute ago, but you couldn't tell the difference. The idea is, here's the bad news. The bad news is if the O2 sensors scream and lean, then the computer shuts off the faucet. That makes the car run a little hotter. Not that big of a deal. Probably get great gas mileage. But in reality, it's not going to have the power that it should have. So when you stomp it to the floor to pass somebody or to race that Chevrolet next to you in the traffic light, you're not going to have everything you should have. So I would just, now up north, you're in Prescott. Is I-17 in Bell close to you? I-17 in Deer Valley?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. Either one of those guys, Action, at Deer Valley and I-17 northwest corner, and Kurtz northeast corner of Bell and I-17. Bet you my bottom dollar that I'll bet you $10 against $1 that they can find it and they can fix it. It's just that They're more experienced in check engine lights than the guys in the surrounding vicinity that don't have to deal with vehicle emissions. And I think a second pair of eyes would be beneficial to you.
Wow. Okay, thank you, Mark. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Action Auto and Kurtz up north are really good guys.
Yeah.
How many times have they kind of waved their magic wand?
A lot.
And the best part about this car referral network, the best car repair shops in Phoenix that we created in 1988, is the callback that they fixed it.
Right.
We're really happy. They did a good job, just like you said you did, all that other kind of stuff. I don't remember. I can't remember all the way back to 1988, but I can't remember either one of them ever been into trouble.
Oh, no.
I can't remember any time that I've had a customer call me and was mad at either one of them.
No.
So,
no.
And I am kind of the focal point when they're mad at one of my shops.
Sure.
They come, and sometimes,
you know it.
And sometimes they use bad words.
Darn.
And that just hurts
You've
my feelings.
You've never heard any
I've
of
never...
those, or wisdom, have you?
No, as a matter of fact, I haven't.
Yeah.
602-508-0960. Let me tell you about S&S Tire. S&S Tire is on the west side. Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. They've been around a very long time. Three locations, and they've been around since 1976. They have a comprehensive line of tires, so no matter whether you need a wheelbarrow tire or a tractor tire, they most likely have it. But because they give you three prices of the same size, good, better, best, and with respect to pricing, you can go in and they'll look at your tire size and give you that information. And they do lots of other work. They do alignment, suspension, and oil changes and stuff like that. But S&S Tire is all about tires. So if you live on the west side and you don't have a place you trust, I know you'll be happy at S&S because I've been referring them for lots of years and they don't let me down. So that's S&S Tire, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. We'll be back in just a few minutes, and we'll take your call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, 602-508-0960. We're going straight to the phone so we can talk to Corky and John. Corky, you're first. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Question I have for you. My son has a 1993 Land Cruiser. He's converted to a hunting vehicle, and he's been doing all kinds of modifications to it, you know, suspension-wise. And recently, he's had a problem where he's in a very, very bad vibration on deceleration. He's thinking it's possible that it could be the U-joint. The vehicle has 200,000 miles on it. And any ideas?
Well, a vibration, us gray-haired guys can usually drive it and tell you real close where it's at, but on drive shafts, you cannot look at the drive shaft U-joints with it in the vehicle. So he has to take loose both ends and put that thing on a workbench and manipulate the U-joints on both ends. And obviously they should swing a 360-degree circle with no noise, no cracking knuckles, and it shouldn't go from 3 to 9 real easy, but from 12 to 6, it's really difficult. So that's the easiest thing to do is just that. If another thing he can do if it's a four-wheel drive is he can take the front drive shaft out and go see if the vibration's there, and then he can put the front in and put it in four-wheel lock, and then take the rear out and go see if it still has the vibration. That's the process of elimination.
Right.
It could be lots of other things.
Right, he did the front. He took the front drive shaft off, and it's really on deceleration where he's noticing it, and it was better with the front drive shaft out. So,
okay.
But I get an idea.
All right. So, see, but unless he puts it in four-wheel drive, that drive shaft is kind of in a neutral position. So we don't know if he went two-wheel drive and pulled the front drive shaft out, but if he was in two-wheel drive and he pulled the drive shaft out, that's not a valid test. It's just because there's no load on that front drive shaft. But if he took it out, then at least he knows what at least one end of the U-joint on that drive shaft feels like, and so I would certainly do the back half and see. Another thing he can do is he can get somebody to ride with him, and they both put, they're both in the front seat, so your son's in the driver and you're in the passenger, and he goes and gets it to happen. Then you switch places, and then one of you sits in the back passenger, and one of you sits in the back driver, and you guys flip around, and I think you'll be able to identify at least if it's in the front of the truck or in the back of the truck. It's, or if you decelerate and you turn hard right or hard left, does that make any difference? But usually a drive shaft will cause a vibration on decel for sure, but it usually has one on excel as well. And it also might have a clunk. So I'm just on the decel. That's an unusual question. We don't usually see the vibration only on decel and not on excel, but it's just a matter of tracking it down in a sophisticated way. You know, most shops have vibration meters, so they're magnetic, and we just put them on the four corners of the car, and we look at the TV screen, and we drive it, get it to happen, and it tells us, you know, front and back, and then all of a sudden we start moving our magnets around, and pretty soon we've identified it. It could also be a differential. I think that's a straight axle rear differential. I don't think that that's an independent differential with independent axles on both sides. But if it is, he'll still have to manipulate those as well. So
yeah, he changed out the third man to put some lower gears in that thing. He could do a little bit better climbing through the woods.
And, yeah.
That may be a possibility also.
Well, and yes, he could have done the backlash on the ring and pinion improperly. The way to find that out is to pull the cover on it and look at the ring and pinion and make sure the wear pattern is acceptable. So that certainly could do it. Now, the pinion can move up and down, and on XL, no vibration, and on D-cell, vibration. So he could have not torqued the pinion nut appropriately, or he didn't set the offset on the ring and the carrier properly. I want to tell you something. There's, with respect to that kind of sophistication, first of all, to set up a differential on a 1 to 10 scale is a 9 or a 10. There are certain guys in my shop that are master techs that I don't want them setting up differentials. There's just two or three in my shop that have perfect permission. They have to set up rear ends. The risk and reward on setting up a rear end is huge. The reward is small, but the risk is huge, because if you don't set it up right and you have to pay for a new ring and pinion and a carrier bearings and a crush sleeve for the ring, and if you end up replacing the gears, it's huge. So you really can't afford not to get it right. And unless your son is a master tech and has got 20 years of experience, him setting up that differential is probably, the odds are probably pretty slim that he did it right. So, well, good luck to you. Thank you very much for calling. John, I'm going to take you in spite of the fact I'm up against a break. What can I do for you?
Mark, I have a 98 Ford F-150, 201,000 miles on it, 5.4 engine, and 3 weeks ago the engine caught fire. I caught it quickly in the top of the wiring we replaced. The engine's running fine now, but what I'm getting is a very hard shift at about 40 miles an hour, but every time I go through the gear at 20, 30, 40, those shifts are minor, a little bit more minor, and then the final shift is a hard clunk, sometimes with a little bit of a whine. What might I be looking for with that?
You know, it's really not, it will not behoove you to start guessing, because the guy on the radio is telling you what direction to go in, and frankly, let me ask you this question, where was the fire? Front, back, left, right of the engine compartment?
On the top front, alternator, all the wire harnesses for the CV, not the PVC, but the throttle body. There's another one there. That type of situation right at the very front of the
okay.
engine.
You don't have any check engine lights?
I do now, and it's through a throttle body code, and I put in a new throttle body because we went to the boneyard and picked an old one up, thinking that might have been it. That's not it. Now I have to drive a little bit longer to get the codes back up.
Okay. Well, there's a whole bunch of setup. You can't just put a throttle body on it or a TPS on it without setup. We have to synchronize the base plates. We have to synchronize the TPS value to the RPM. So there's three things you have to synchronize. Now, the transmission is going to shift based on throttle activity. So if your throttle activity is off and the TPS is reading off, then your shift is going to be off too. I think I'd probably get the TPS issue fixed before I start going into the transmission. What part of town do you live in?
Kirk's is where I'm going next. I'm going to be making a phone call tomorrow, you know, or on Monday to go to him. I'm not too far away from Kirk's.
Okay. All right.
21st, 26th, or whatever.
All righty. Now, there's some transmission shops that are available, but one of the guys up north, up where you're talking about, is A&S Transmissions. Now, Alger's probably one of the best transmission guys I've ever met. It's going to take you a while to get in and out of there, unless, of course, you sit him down and say to him, you know, I want to bring it in and I want to get it out within a couple of days. He's just so busy. So
okay.
If he has a fault, he's not a good scheduler, but as far as transmissions are concerned, he's good. I still would have somebody mechanical get that TPS situated first. I think that's going to be your cheaper avenue, okay?
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much for help, Mark.
You bet. You're what? 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open. There's five of them. 602-508-0960. Forty-five minutes after 10 o'clock, we've got four lines available. We got Darwin holding on, but before we talk to Darwin, let's do a little business here. Strictly Diesel and Repair is up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Nate is the guy you're going to talk to. He is a diehard diesel service repair and parts facility. Nate works on both foreign and domestic light-duty diesel trucks. Again, I-17 and Bell. You can go to his website 24 hours a day, of course, and look at diesel components and parts for your truck. So he's probably got a bunch of air filters, different air filters and stuff like that, when there's going to be some comments as well. So the idea is that you're asking somebody who lives and breathes diesels, that's Strictly Diesel, has some of the best diesel techs there are out there, and he's dedicated to providing the very best service possible and getting the job done right the first time. Strictly Diesel. Darwin, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 1997 one-ton Dodge van, and I have electric door lock, and on the driver's side, it just says fail. I can't get it to even begin to work, and the passenger side works great. Can you tell me a place where I can take this, and they will absolutely fix this thing correctly for me?
Well, it's easy. It's easy. What somebody has to do is pull the door panel off, and there's going to be a solenoid in there that activates the door lock in there. The first thing we got to do is we know that we have two wires. So if we put power and ground, it locks. And then if we switch the wires and we go ground and power, it unlocks. So we know that. So the first thing you'd want to do is go in, pull the door panel off, and check to see if you can activate that door assembly. Now, do you hear any noise at all, by the way?
None.
Okay, all right. The door lock assembly, sometimes the linkage will come apart, and you'll still hear the solenoid clunk, 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 but nothing will happen. Once you determine that the solenoid can work, then more than likely you're going to have a problem at the master switch, which is the switch that gets used 99% of the time. So then you'd go underneath it, you'd pull the master switch out of the door panel, and you'd go ahead and identify with the wiring diagram what those two are, and you would artificially inseminate that solenoid on the other side of your truck. And if you could do it there, that means the circuit is clear, and then you know the switch is bad. So what part of town do you live in?
Greenfield and Southern.
I think I would go to Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street, just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Thompson's Auto Repair, Main Street and Stapley, just east on the south side of the road. He's been around Mesa for a very long time. His family has. And Brian and Thelma are the salt of the earth. When you meet him, you'll know why I like him so much. So that's cool. Where I would go.
All right. Thank you very much, Mark.
You betcha. And all right there, T.O.T. Thompson's. I had to mute my wife's microphone because during the break, she went and got a bunch of cookies and almonds, and I wanted to spare you her flapping her gums and chewing on all of her food and everything. They can't hear you because I have your microphone off, so you can say all you want and use all the bad words you want, but I'm not going to let them hear you eat your food. So, nevertheless, yes, you were during the break, and I'm not taking any chances. That's why we're not talking to you right now. 602-508-0960. We're going to be But you still got time to call in. Gil will be answering it. He's the real brains behind this radio show. So he tells me when I'm out of line. He tells me when to take my breaks. And he basically gets you loaded up, and he says in my ear that John is on next in line. And then I go to John. That's kind of how it works. We've been doing radio since 1988, and nothing has really changed except the questions and the cars. Back in 1988, we just had electronics that kind of came in strong in 1981, but we didn't have fuel injection until 1996. So during that 81 to 96, it was a lot of flux there. We were moving around a lot. Cars were changing a lot. There was a lot of technicians and shops when they went to some electronic carburetors and they went to electronic spark control. So we went from points and condenser in 1974, 75, and 76, all of a sudden to electronic distributors and pickup assemblies and ignition modules. I remember that vividly. We were all scared to death. We had no idea how that system worked. And through training in schools that were often put on by vendors who sold those parts, we were all very comfortable. Now today, at high energy ignition, electronic ignition in the 70 model Chevy, Ford, and Dodge, we know that like the back of our hands. In a heartbeat, what's the matter with that? That's going to be one of those that takes 10 minutes to 30 minutes to figure out what's going on. And then, of course, you bid the work, and if they okay it, then you go put it on there, and if it starts, then you're home free. Mm-hmm. Or if the mist goes out, then you're still home free.
Yeah.
So it's those are the kinds. Now, fuel injection in 1996 was a different story. They came out with a bunch of them. 602.
Well, folks, I'm really sorry about the last hour, the end of the last hour. We've got some technical difficulties. And just like last weekend, we had some. We don't really know whose fault it is, and we won't know till Monday or Tuesday as we struggle to work through this. The way that we're doing the show today has been the most trustworthy way. We haven't had any problems at all, but for whatever reason, today we can't touch base. So we're on the old-fashioned telephone, 602-508-0960. Gil is still going to answer the phone. We're going to still take questions. So if you want to join us, 602-508-0960. We talked about Action Auto Repair last hour, I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a good guy. Tom, I've known since the late 80s. He started in North Phoenix, actually the late 70s. I've known him because he started in Deer Valley and North Phoenix in 1983. So no matter what kind of service you need, Action's a good place for this reason. He's really good with respect to if you are better served somewhere else, he'll tell you where you're better served than him. And that actually has a whole lot to do with everything. So if the shop will admit they're not the best guy for your car, that's a good thing. So if you live up in the Deer Valley area, North Phoenix area, and you don't have a repair shop, can I suggest Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley? 602-508-0960. I don't really know where we were at when we were talking, but I think we were talking about electronic ignition and we were talking about fuel injection and all that other kind of stuff that happened back in the 80s and in the 90s. Today, the fuel injection system in your entire car from probably the year 2000 and north, your car has a bunch of sensors in it that help control timing and fuel delivery. So those are the two major components to get your car to drive down the road. And as a result of that, those are real primary components in your computer. But in reality, you could have 30 or 40 sensors in your car. The sensors basically communicate to the computer in what we call a voltage language. So I want you to pretend that everything in the car that's talking back and forth is 1 to 5. So if the O2 sensor is giving a 1 signal to the computer, that means I don't see enough fuel. Turn the faucet slightly on. The complete opposite of the number 1 is a number 5, and if the O2 sensor, the oxygen sensor, says 5, then the computer knows that there's way too much fuel coming through. And as a result of that, they need to turn the faucet down. So this happens hundreds, if not thousands, of times a second. Everything talks that way. when the throttle, when you hit your throttle on your computerized car, the throttle position sensor has the same options, 1 through 5. 1 is idle, 5 is midway on your throttle, and wide open throttle would be 5. So you have idle, somewhere in the middle, and wide open throttle. The computer will watch your throttle, and it will open the faucet appropriately for gasoline because it knows that you're going to need a bunch more fuel at 50 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour than you do at idle. Again, it happens in the blink of an eye. The speed sensor is the same way, 1 through 5, in a simplistic way, by the way. I'm giving you a simplistic viewpoint of it. The speedometer knows that 0 is 1, and it knows whatever your speed limiter allows you is the high end. Let's say it's 100. So everything in the middle in the computer will just look at the number and to determine how fast you're going. It will do that to shift the transmission. So the computer knows when to shift the transmission because it's also got programming in it. So when you reach this point in this load, this RPM, and this throttle, I want to shift from first to second. And that's kind of how it is. Many of you have probably experienced a situation where you ran out of throttle. And typically that happens in the 90 mile an hour range. And that's because the computer sees the mile per hour in an area and it's been cut off. The programming says 93, he can go 93, she can go 93, but we're not going to let her go 94. So at 94, they start trimming off the fuel. They start shutting off the fuel and they keep you at 93 miles an hour and don't let you go past that. So it's the same way with an overheat situation. The overheat situation, there could come a time where the computer will turn on all the electric fans, and the computer will retard or advance the timing because that helps it run cooler than retarding the timing. And the computer will do everything it can, and then pretty soon it's going to turn on some red lights and say, you got to stop. And obviously a tow bill is going to be cheaper than an engine, and I can't tell you how many times folks have actually had a problem, and they thought, well, I'll just drive another 2 miles home, and then ultimately the car ends up at the shop, and they find out that what's really happened is that the customer has wiped out the motor. And so you run into those kinds of things that create those kinds of problems, and that has everything to do with everything. So anyway, we've got a caller. That's a good idea. Gil, who are we talking to?
Say hello to Al.
Al, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning. I've got a 91 Toyota pickup with a 3-liter V6 in it, and it's got 494,000 miles on it, so it's almost broke in.
Yeah.
I'm having a little bit of issue with it. When I accelerate, it is stuttering a little bit, and I've changed spark plugs, distributor cap, rotor, fuel filter, checked the timing, checked all the vacuum hoses, checked all my plug wires, and I'm just kind of coming to a standstill on it.
And okay. No check engine lights, no codes?
No, it's an old OBD1. So it does get a check engine light, but doesn't throw. I mean, it would if it had it, but no, there's no check engine light. It idles fine. It starts fine. It's just under load. It seems to hesitate a little bit.
Okay. Well, one would think that if you're going to fix this by process of elimination, you'd have to first determine whether it's spark or fuel, and because it idles fine, it appears that load, I agree that load would be that situation, but if, in spite of the fact that it doesn't run very well, will the car do 60 or 70 miles an hour?
Yes.
Okay, so that's going to eliminate a fuel supply problem. That's going to eliminate a fuel pump. That's going to eliminate a fuel filter. So what we're left with is a spark. And obviously, shoot. I'm scared to guess for you because I'm scared you're going to go out and buy a bunch more parts. And I think you've already spent far more money guessing than it would have cost you to have somebody diagnose it. What really needs to be done is someone needs to put put the distributor on us on a scope or an analyzer that we can watch what's going on with the electrical. So we're going to look at the square wave. We're going to look on and off on the coil, and we're going to make sure that that's a nice, clean thing, because this could be something to do with the distributor where the distributor shaft is worn out and wobbling, which would cause a load miss. But then again, if you want to put one in it, then go ahead. But if you're going to do that, I'd do that first, and then I'd do the wire second. But this could be a pickup assembly, but when you buy a rebuilt distributor, you're probably going to get a new pickup assembly, because I think the module on your 91 Toyota is remote. Otherwise, it's not on the distributor. So
I put a new distributor 2 years ago, and it's got a lifetime warranty, so I could get another one. If that's the issue, that wouldn't be that big a deal. It wouldn't cost me anything. It's got a lifetime warranty.
Okay. Well, you're certainly welcome. Well, what prevents you from just having somebody look at this? I mean, I think most shops are going to quote you somewhere between, on the low side, $35, $40, and on the high side, over $100. And most everybody will give you that bracket and say, we'll call you. And it's not uncommon. I see bills every day of my life where the bid was $100 and the diagnosis was $60. And I'm not to suggest that there's shops out there that won't take you to the top end regardless of how long it took them. But the most of the shops that I think have been in business many, many years, for 10, 15, 20 years, are not the guys that do that. It's usually the guy who's in business a year or two who just hasn't learned that that's not necessary. But you can certainly do that distributor, but the distributor doesn't have the module in it. And if the pickup's talking to the module and the module's supposed to send spark at the appropriate time and the module's defective, then the distributor won't help you at all. And by the time you put an ignition module on it, you spent twice as much money as anybody would have charged you to diagnose it. So if you want to continue to guess, I think the distributor is an educated guess, and you still haven't done the spark plug wires. And so I would take it outside tonight when it's dark, and I'd open up the hood, and I'd be in a dark place, and I'd have a spray bottle with me, and I'd spray down all the ignition systems, starting from the cap to all the spark plugs, and see if there's any errant spark. The water will help you see that, and I would try that too. So you can try any of that you want. It's going to be difficult, and again, I think you're best served just by having somebody do it. The seasoned guys out there are probably not going to spend an hour looking at what the problem is. That's
so
just
it. Who would you recommend up in the North Glendale, Peoria area?
Thunderbird Auto at 88th Avenue and or 88th Avenue and Bell. Is it Bell? No, Thunderbird. That's right. Yeah, 88th Avenue and Thunderbird. Tom's a gray-haired guy. He could find it for you. You know, and here's what I want you to do. I don't want you to tell him anything. I want you just to give him the symptoms and perhaps insist that his senior tech or him goes for a ride where you can demonstrate the problem. Because if you say, I've replaced all the fuel system, then they're going to go to the ignition side. And if you say, I've replaced all the ignition side, they're going to go to the fuel. And I suggest that's not in your best interest, because you haven't fixed it yet, and I think it's a bad idea for you to direct the repair. I think it's a great idea that you just show him the symptoms. He'll see that you've got all kinds of new parts underneath there, but let him decide, because that's the first thing you have to decide is am I going to fuel or spark? Now, I don't know if you've disconnected the EGR valve, but I'd pull the vacuum line on the EGR valve and plug it with a pencil. Plug the vacuum line with a pencil or a golf tee, and go drive it and see if that makes a difference, because if the EGR starts fluttering, you're going to have a problem like you're describing.
Okay.
So that's what I would do. Good luck. And you know what I'd appreciate it is my email address is mark@marksalem.com. And if you just send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, and tell me what ultimately fixes, I'd be interested, because what you have is an unusual situation.
All right.
All righty. Thank you, Al. Thank you very much. All righty. We'll be back talking about cars in just a minute, but let me give you the phone number one more time, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. Well, welcome back, everybody. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and if you'd like to join us, you certainly can. We're going to go to Mark. He's been on the line. The phone number, by the way, is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And, Mark, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My son has a 2004 Chevy Impala. It's got about 160,000 miles on it. And about 2 months ago, he had a case where the car wasn't responding well to the steering wheel, and he would get some noise if he turned all the way in one direction. The front end and tie rods and everything is fine, and we checked the power steering fluid, and it was very brown, dirty. We were able to get some air to come out of it. And about 6 weeks ago, we flushed all the power steering fluid through the rack and pinion and the pump and everything. Probably ran about a gallon and a half of fluid through it until it was very clean coming out of the return line. And In the last 6 weeks now, his steering problem has come back. It started to, steering wheel kind of chatters when he's kind of in the middle of the range. And the fluid is very brown and dirty, just like it was before we flushed it.
Okay. You didn't happen to run the return line through a coffee filter before you ran that old fluid into a five-gallon bucket, did you?
No, we didn't.
Okay. All right. Now, let's think about this together, okay?
Yep.
And the only thing that's moving in that whole system is the rack with steering input, with steering wheel input, and, of course, the pump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you're describing sounds like to me that you've got a pump that's coming apart, and it's contaminating the rack, and it's burning the fluid. See, the rack can't burn the fluid, but the pump can.
Okay.
And it chattering would suggest that we've got some of the orifices intermittently plugged up with metal that's being shed by the pump that ends up in the rack and ends up in the pump.
Mm-hmm.
So I because of the brown fluid, and because when you flush the fluid, I'm thinking you got some of the metal out of it. So when you get brand new fluid in there and you flushed it and it was okay for some period of time and then the same problem came back, it would seem to me that the rack would be fine because it can't burn the fluid and it doesn't start shedding metal, but the pump does. And Now when you put the new pump on, you can't take the chance that you're going to flush metal out of that rack into the new pump. So when you hang the new pump on, then at the bottom, the hose that comes off of the return line from the rack and that goes back to the pump, you're going to take that one off, which is the return line. But if you took the nipple off the pump and drained it there, then the rack is already, that pressure's already gone through, and so has the metal.
Mm-hmm.
So we need the line from the rack into a five-gallon bucket, and then you're going to use like a little rubber cap on the pump so that nothing is returned to the pump. That's what I'm trying to say. Nothing is returned to the pump.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll start it up and turn the steering wheel left and right, and pretty soon you'll run out of fluid. So you shut it off and add some more fluid. What we do is we just put a funnel down in there, and we put have a quart of oil, and we just kind of keep the reservoir full while we're, so somebody else is inside the car and the car is at idle and they're turning the steering wheel left and right. So it's actually a three-person deal. One guy's filling up the brand new pump. One guy's holding the return line and the other guy's turning the steering wheel back and forth. So that way we flush everything out of the rack. We hook everything up together. And based on what you said last time, that should do it.
Yeah. When we flushed it the first time, we pulled the return line off the pump. And then we extended it and ran it into a pail, and then I just kept pouring brake fluid in the reservoir while he ran the rack and pinion back and forth. And
okay. All right. Didn't you have to plug, though? Didn't you have to plug the return line nipple, the low-pressure return line nipple going into the pump?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Okay, good. You did it right, then. You did it right.
Yeah.
Because when you put fluid in the reservoir, we don't want it leaking out of the pump. We want it going into the high-pressure part of the pump.
Right.
And so you did it right. You did it right. Here's the bad news. The bad news is if I'm right and if it's the pump's coming apart, mm-hmm. then the rack's not going to be far behind because it's hard for that rack to digest metal.
Right, right.
So if you have a problem and the rack goes bad, the symptoms will be different, by the way. So don't call Mark Salem and say you were wrong. There'll be different symptoms if the rack, and it'll start leaking, as most of the time it'll start leaking. And after 160,000 miles, the thing's been around the world six times, so it's probably giving you good service.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck to you. Yep. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. That was an especially good call because it sounded like, no, it didn't sound like, he clearly, Mark was clearly well-versed on what he was doing. And he gave me the symptoms, which is just great. And then he told me what he did. And the fact that he pulled the return line and the fact that he flushed it, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. But there's two ends of the return line. And I didn't want the fluid coming from the pump through the rack, pick up all the metal there, and then go back to the pump. Then we begin to circulate it. We don't want the new pump to have anything coming into it from the rack. So it's kind of hard to explain, but there's a high pressure exit on the pump and a low pressure entrance on the pump, and we want to interrupt the entrance. So it was really nice because I liked the part where he said the first time we flushed it, everything was okay for some period of time, and then the problem came back. And so those are that kind of an exchange, and those were kind of key words to me. And it would have been the same conversation had I been at the shop and somebody would have, one of the techs comes in and tells me that. We would get all the gray-haired guys together, and we would school the young buck and tell him. But that's the brain trust. It's kind of like all shops have it. The more senior guys help everybody else out. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted facility, auto repair facility. It's been family owned and operated since 1982. Chuck started it, and then his son Derek now runs it. And Automotive Dynamics, their staffs and mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, Derek can ensure that they're not going to sell you unnecessary parts or repair. So if you're looking for a great shop in the Sun City area, pretty much a full-service shop, I would recommend you visit Auto Dynamics on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Have them do an oil change. That's an easy thing to do. And then you can decide how you were treated. What you want to avoid is the 1995 oil change and then turn around and end up with a laundry list that's a mile long. And, you know, the end result is thousands of dollars of what you need. Don't forget that self-defense for car expense includes the following sentences. Show me in my owner's manual where the service is necessary and due, the service that you're suggesting I do. And number two, if you're going to fix motor mounts, and that's part of what your list is, or any part, what symptom do I have today that you're going to repair with your suggested repair? So what kind of things is going on today that you're going to fix, and I'm going to be able to say, oh, the vibration's gone. It was the motor mounts. Or when you put the motor mounts in for $1,200, then you say to yourself, nothing's changed. It feels the same. It drives the same. Nothing's changed. That's going to be a bad feeling. So there is typically symptoms associated with those kinds of suggested repairs. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us. We're going to be here till noon. Every Saturday we're here from 10 to 12, so you're more than welcome to come in and give us a call. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. This is KKNT 960. We'll be back. Okay, it's 11:34, 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let's go to the phones, and we're going to talk to Cindy. Cindy, good morning or good afternoon. How are you, and what can I do for you?
I'm fine, thank you. I've been wanting to call for a while, so I finally decided to get the nerve up to call. I used Toyota 4Runner, but I've been wanting a newer car with bells and whistles, but I don't want to pay for a brand new car. So I was looking at, I wanted your opinion on which car has more repairs to the bells and whistles or mechanical issues. So I'm trying to decide between a Lincoln MKX, one of those small SUVs, and the Cadillac equivalent of that. So which would you recommend? Is one better than the other, or stay away from both, or stay with my Toyotas or Hondas, or what?
You know, that's a tough call. When you give me those two, you give me the Lincoln and the equivalent of the Cadillac. You know, I just can't answer that question. Those cars do not dominate the car market. Those cars may very well be less than 1 or 2% of them on the road. So it's difficult to but I mean, I could do that if I was at work right now, and I could look up. But I need you to be specific about the Cadillac. Tell me which model you want.
I don't remember the numbers. I wish they would give them names, but it's like the it kind of looks like the MKX, which is the SUV type. I was more interested in the used ones because you can pick up a used one pretty good price. But I'm worried about the more bells and whistles they have, do the more electronics they have, do you see they're having more issues?
Okay. I don't agree that the more bells and whistles it has, that you're going to spend a whole lot more money. My wife's car's got 88,000 miles on it, and we recently had to replace the rear backup camera, and that's the first maintenance big ticket item that we've had on her car. I also think it has a lot to do with who's driving it and how they're driving it, because I can assure you a couple of 18-year-old kids can tear up just about any car. As far as a used car is concerned, my strong suggestion would be to you is have any used car checked over by the repair shop that's going to do the work. So it's called a used car checkover. It usually is about $100, give or take about $25. They go through the car and they give you a list of what it needs today and next week, next month, and next year. It's also important on any used car that you run a Carfax to make sure that what you're being told is the truth. I can't tell you how many times a month I do a Carfax. It happened just the other day, and the facility was saying that this is a one-owner car. I ran a Carfax for my customer, and it was on its third owner. And so the customer, if he bought the car, would be the fourth owner.
Yeah.
So I don't like the idea that people don't know the history, or they represent that they do know the history, but they don't. So now here's my offer to you. If you would email me, mark@marksalem.com,
yep,
and give me your two specific models, I'll do two things for you for free. I'll look up in our database, and I'll look at the tickets and the cost of the tickets for those two cars for the last 3 years. And number two, I'll grab everybody at lunch, and I'll ask them. And you'll have the benefit of about 10 or 12 people that have been in the business a very long time. Seven of them are master techs, so we're all real seasoned. And I will ask them the question, if you want to give me four cars, I'll take four cars. Then you have to tell me whether you're buying used or new. And if you'll do that, I'll help you. I'll give you some suggestions based on historical repairs and based on what those cars look like from my repair shop's point of view. Not from every repair shop, but from mine.
Yeah, and the current car I have is a Toyota 4Runner. It's been a great car since 2008. The Carfax said it had one accident. And so that really doesn't scare me because it's been a great car, even though I don't know what accident it had. But so sometimes Carfaxes can scare you away from a car. But is there any advice for Carfax users in that? Or?
Say that last question again. I got any advice, and then I kind of missed
it. How much do you take? Well, like you were just telling me, you take it with a grain of salt because the Carfax just disproved what somebody was saying. But do sometimes they alter those? I'm worried about Carfax. Sometimes they can't be as honest as they are. But
you know, that just really isn't my experience. Carfax
okay.
buys. Carfax buys. Data from guys like me, although I don't sell it to Carfax. I don't think, okay. I think I need to ask all my customers if I can share their repairs with someone else. But I know that many, many, many dealers sell their data. And I can tell you that most Carfaxes, well, I can tell you all the Carfaxes I've seen probably prove that whoever's selling them is not telling you the truth. I have really 99% faith in Carfax and the data it has, because there's a lot of times when we get a Carfax, the person who's selling the car, whether it be a private party or a used car lot or whether it be a dealership, they're making up the history of the car to benefit them. And that one owner, you know, 30,000 mile car is quite different than Carfax. That turns out to be, it turns out to be a salvage title car. So that's kind of what we're worried about. But I want to put your mind at ease, if I can, that Carfax is a very valuable tool when you buy a used car. And I'm not doing commercials for them, and they don't pay me. Please understand, I'm giving you the same advice I'd give my mother or my neighbors or my customers, okay?
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. We'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back, everybody. We have somehow reconnected, and neither Gil nor I has a clue as to what happened. And I'm going to turn you on. You're all set.
Okay.
We don't even know. We don't even know. Neither
Mark,
one of us.
If you can pump up your level just a little bit.
Okay, I've given you all I can give you.
Okay, we're good.
Is that, are you okay? Okay.
Yeah, we're okay.
And asked me if I'd bring up my level, and I said, I'm giving you all I can give you. So I'm on mic high, and I'm doing the best I can. Nevertheless, we're going to go to the phones real quick. Doc is first. Doc, how can I help you today?
I got a 2012 Lincoln MKT. With 85,000 miles on it, and it's a direct injection EcoBoost, as you know. And with that, you see on the internet a lot of times they're talking about the fact that the cylinder intake valves in 2 and 3 get corrosion, deposits on them that restrict the airflow into the cylinders. And I'm wondering if that's true or not, and if it is, what do you do about it?
Okay, the symptoms are an engine miss, and the engine will start running pretty poorly. Here's what happened. We had the injector behind the intake valve. Now, as the valve opens and closes, we need to put a film of oil on the valve stem. We need to lubricate the hole the valve goes in and out of, okay? So when we spray gas on the back of the intake valve, we would wash that oil away. So it was, everything was fine. With direct injection, they moved the injector to the cylinder adjacent to the spark plug. So the valve is now opening and closing, but there's nothing to burn the oil off. The gas would hit that film of oil and wash it into the cylinder. So now we have this carbon problem, and it is not related. This is a YouTube kind of thing where, oh, it's always related to cylinder 2 and 3. It's not. It's related to all kinds of cylinders. What you can do is every probably 30,000 miles, have somebody run some cleaner through it because it's direct injection for no other reason. Your motor's not going to love you if you do a cleaner once a day, once a week, once a month. It's not going to love you anymore. So, and then also when you do drive it, it's okay to roughhouse it. So it's okay for you to rattle it every once in a while. When you're getting on the freeway Sunday morning, no one's around you, you haven't been drinking, you look around, you're at the top of the ramp, the freeway's heart is vacant, you nail it to the floor and you run it pretty hard to the bottom of the ramp and then slow down for the speed limit. So all of that stuff. But you're at 85,000 miles, you said, and you haven't had a problem. That bodes well for your kind of driving, either that or your wife's been hot rodding it, one or the other.
Well, she does a lot of expressway driving between downtown Phoenix and out here on East Valley. So she's putting 50 miles round trip on it 4 or 5 days a week.
Yeah, there's all kinds of. This is brand new to us, to our industry. This is brand new. We don't really know how to handle it. There's all kinds of concoction and witch doctors and, you know, take some camel urine and put it in your gas tank and it'll eat up this carbon. All this craziness out there. Now, the machine shops are getting a lot of this because people are pulling the heads off and the intake port is completely plugged up. And as a result of that, it goes to the machine shop. They take all the valves out of it. They clean everything up. They put it all back together. So
I've been using lots nail of urine myself. Pocus.
You've been what?
I've been using snail urine myself, but okay. at about 70,000 miles, I ran some of that BG stuff through there, you know, through the intake, uh-huh. and she smoked for a while. So yes. I guess I'm doing what you say, every 30,000, run a little bit of that through it.
Yeah.
And now, like I said, she drives it. See, the thing of it is that supposedly what happens is instead of the crankcase ventilation sprays the 2 and 3 valve on the Ford EcoBoost, so that's supposedly the source of the problem in that engine.
No, we're not using the intake valve other than to run air. So air's going through the air filter, and then it sits in the intake manifold until the intake valve opens, and then we're just running air into the cylinder. The fuel's coming through the injector.
No, but above the valve in the cylinder, the crankcase ventilation goes onto those two stems. It's the oil.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that. Every other PCV valve system is sucking from vacuum and is going to grab a valve cover. It's not in the intake system at all.
Well, so, the Ford mechanic shows you where it is on the Ford EcoBoost. But anyway, right. Thank you for the information.
Wait a minute. Oh. Okay, hold on. How do you get that urine out of the snail?
You have to get a lot of. I do that before we cook a meat. I mean, they're escargot, so you get the snail urine out first. I store it in a bottle, and then we add it whenever we need to.
No, okay.
He must eat a lot of snails.
Seafoam, okay?
And I like seafoam. Let me tell you something. Some of the chemicals that are out there, I mean, if I buy this chemical and I use lots of this chemical, they're going to give me money back, and then they're going to put me on my website, and then they're going to send a lot of customers to me. I don't like that. I want your product to work. I don't care about the rest of that stuff. Seafoam's a pretty good situation.
I love it, my boat.
Okay, did you see this number 2 and number 3 cylinder that happened to be closest to the PCV valve? Did you see that from on a Ford website or not?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And I'm just confused. We got vacuum where we're sucking the fumes out of the valve covers, and then we're sending it to the entire intake manifold because the PCV valve line, the suck portion, is the intake manifold where vacuum exists. And
that's
that
what
point,
I usually see.
Yeah, but I'm confused, and I've been wrong before. So if I'm wrong, I'll raise my... Renee, tell him.
Yeah, you've been wrong before.
And I've been wrong before, and do I know how to raise my hand?
Most of the time,
oh,
except
God.
With me.
But anyway,
nothing's going to happen if I do that every 30,000 miles. I'm going to give the car to my kid, so he usually drives their F-150s until they fall apart, so okay.
You bet. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your humorous comment. You made my day, buddy. Thank you very much, Doc.
Yeah.
All righty. Snail urine. Remember that, Renee.
Okay.
Next time we go to the store, we're going to get some snails, and I'm suspecting we're going to need some tweezers, but I'm not sure.
I'm not helping you.
All righty. Tom, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mark, how you doing? I talked to you a couple weeks ago. I was concerned about a car not running warm enough this time of year, like 175. And it's got supposedly 180-degree thermostat in it. I was wondering, do you know a parts man or a parts department? Every time I go in and say, I've got this car, has this thermostat in it, I've got the number, then everyone says application. I would like to cross-reference it and go to a 195. Who would I go to see for that?
Well, What year is your car?
It's a 2016 Hello? Mazda, and it's got a 180 in it. I did the temperature gun, like you said. I'm not getting those warm underhood temperatures. So I'm getting like 180 at the top radiator holes when it's after I run it.
Okay. All right, let me ask you questions.
Sure.
So you went into the parts store on a 2016, and they're telling you it needs a 180?
Yes. Yeah, everywhere I go, and it's like talking to a recording on it, you know, I tell them what I want, and they say, what kind of car, and then that's what the book shows. So I'd like to find an old-fashioned parts guy who can cross-reference. So with this part thermostat I've got here, this is a 195, even though the application on it keeps saying a 180.
All right. I'm going to do something for you that I never do, but I'm going to do it just for you. All right?
Okay.
I want you got a pencil handy?
Got it right here.
480-598-1234.
Okay.
480-598-1234. You're going to call and ask for Jeff. And if they ask you why, you're going to say that Mark is allowing me to talk to Jeff about a parts problem. Then when you get Jeff, you tell him that Mark gave me permission to call you and talk to you. And you give him your name. And I'm going to tell Jeff that he's only supposed to talk to you. And I'm going to tell him you have a 2016 Mazda. And Jeff will guide you. He's the best parts guy. The other day, I bet him we had an old Packard or a Rolls Royce in
Packard.
What Packard? Mm-hmm. And we needed a water pump for it. It was like a 49. And so I said, there's no way in God's green earth you're going to find a water pump for this Packard. You need to find somebody who will rebuild it for us. And I don't know, 2 days later he comes into my office and he kind of tosses this box on my desk. And he goes, why don't you open that up and look at it? And I said, has that got a Packer water pump in it? And he goes, yep. And I said, I don't need to open it. I said, get out of my office. So he's really good at what he does, and I'm going to let him help you out on this, okay?
Thank you. Mark, I got one other thing.
Okay.
Mark, one other thing. If you sneak up behind those snails, sometimes you can get them to release the snails.
You don't even have to use.
Well, you know what? We were talking during the break. Renee goes, if the snail has a pair of pants, we scare them, then we can just wring out their pants.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a lot better to talk about that than camel urine.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
That's it. All righty, you betcha. 602-50. We don't have enough time for you. I'm sorry. Anyway, I'm sorry for the technical issues. I'm sorry that we had some problems. And Gil, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still trying to get my brain around what you guys are talking about. The camel stuff and the snail stuff.
Yeah.
You know
way
what?
Too much.
And I didn't have a signal from the station. That's the reason why I said, Gil.
Yes.
This is virtually going to guarantee me an audience with the GM on Monday. Okay? Guaranteed. He's going to call me in and he's going to say, Mr. Salem, I'd like to talk to you. What time can you be in my office? And I have my own chair in his office. You know that. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to sit down and he's going to say, I understand that you may have got off track from the car show this weekend. And I'm going to say, yes, sir, I think we did a couple of times. And he says, he's going to say, well, what did you say? And I'm going to say, you've already listened to the logger tape, so you already know what I said. And I'm going to hurt Gil. I'm going to make Gil pay for snitching me off. And he's going to laugh and he's going to say, no, that's not true. Gil didn't snitch you off.
We just became a zoo section for a little bit. That's okay.
That's right.
That's it. That's exactly right. But anyway, I'm going to do what I always do. I'm going to say I'm very sorry. I'll try to stay away from those kinds of comments, although I can't possibly guarantee it for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And this is a show to remember, believe me. Yeah. Oh, camel pee-pee and snail pee-pee.
Yeah,
and,
very good.
And that's just something that we ought to stay away
from. And cars.
Snail pants.
And
I don't know how that got into it. But
yeah,
yes. And snails with pants.
Yeah. Yeah.
They probably have Levi's on because they're studly guys. All right. This portion of Unhood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been on Stapley and Main Street for quite a few years. Brian and Thelma own the place. They're a good place to go to. They're a very good place to go to. They're the only shop in Mesa that I point to and say, those of you in Mesa, if you can, go to Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Now, North Phoenix, you're talking about Kurtz Auto Repair, which is on I-17 and Bell. You've heard me talk about Kurtz. Kurtz is a great guy. He can pull rabbits out of his hat. He's a master. He's got two other masters there. They've been around the block. Two of them have gray hair. One of them's bald, so we don't know what color his hair is. But nevertheless, Kurtz at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner, is a great place. And he was a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner not too long ago, and I think that says a lot. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Give me your phone number. I'll call you back on a blocked line, or I'll answer you via email, mark@marksalem.com. Mark at MarkSalem.com, or Salem Witches, which is like my sisters, the Salem Girls, and they're all witches. Nevertheless, I'll be in trouble with them, but I don't care. We'll see you next week.